Amore, sweet love, I'm sure that you can relate to some of that. I know I can. I've been blessed for 20 years to have that kind of love with my wonderful wife. And we can watch those romantic parts in those movies and it's, aww. But we're not talking about that today. That'll be for another time. Today we're talking about love your enemies. Loving your enemies. That's not that. This is crazy love here. This is the craziest, way out there concept that God could have commanded us to do. Because this goes way out of the box. I mean, we were more comfortable, I think, with the Old Testament model, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. We believe in this. We grew up in a society that teaches us that we give as good as we get. Or better yet, we get them before they can get us. That's what we're used to hearing. That's what the society tells us to do. That's the natural reaction of humanity. But here's an interesting fact. For a Christian, in this society, in this world, there are people out there that might not know who Noah was, who Moses is. They might not know anything about the gospel of Jesus Christ. But if they know one thing about a Christian, they know one thing. They know that a Christian is to love his enemy. They know that one thing. That is a distinguishing virtue of Christians. And people know that across the world, around the globe. It is one of the most primary functions of a Christian. And I look at that and I'm like, wait a minute. I fall short. I don't know if you feel that way sometimes. Maybe you feel like you fall a little short of what God wants you to do to be a Christian. And I know I do. Because sometimes I don't always love my enemies. Sometimes I can get downright mean. It's happened on occasion or two. I have actually wished some not very nice things to happen to certain people. And if Stefan spills my coffee one more time, so where does that leave me? You know, as a Christian, I have to wonder. What I want to understand here today and what I want to try and portray to you is that I want to get around this command. I want to really understand it. I want to understand it in my mind, in my heart, how we can address it in our lives, how we can make it part of our will. Because that's what we need to do. But to understand this, we have to answer a few questions. The first one is, how do we get so confused? How are we so messed up? In our reading today, and if we can bring that first part back up on the board, Jesus said, you have heard it said, love your neighbors and hate your enemies. What does he mean, you have heard it said? Heard it said by whom? Who's telling him this? This is a teaching. Jesus is telling him, you've been taught this. This is what you're taught. This has been embraced by society. You're taught this by the Pharisees. You know this is the way the things are supposed to be. But I'm telling you something different. Jesus said that we are to love our enemies. And that's kind of crazy. I was looking this up and I was trying to see, well, hate your enemies. Wait a minute. I don't remember that being one of the Ten Commandments. I looked for it, didn't see it in there. And I thought, well, maybe it's one of the new ones. Because I know there's some new ones been added. I saw the Heaven Almighty and there was number 11. It said, you know, to do thou shalt do the dance. So I do that one quite frequently. I'm good at it. But I don't remember hating your enemies being a commandment of God. As a matter of fact, when Jesus was asked, what were the greatest commandments? Matthew 22, 37 through 40 said to love the Lord your God with all your soul, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. That is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that is completely opposite of what has been being taught so far. I mean, it's okay to say to love your neighbor. You know, I can understand that. Love God. Okay, love God. I got this. Love your neighbor. Yeah, okay, can do. Got that part. But love your enemy? Love your enemy? Wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. That goes completely against human nature. How do I do that? That is such a crazy idea. Nowhere in the Old Testament does it say to love your, to hate your enemies, but yet we're taught that. And I wanted to find out, how did they come up with this? Where did this come from in the first place? Why is it that Jesus starts this off and says, I know you have heard it said to hate your enemies? How did that come about? So I was looking at it and I was reading and I said, you know, I could see where this would come about. No fault of the Pharisees completely, because I could see how if you were studying this, you might think this way. When Joshua was sent into the land of Canaan, he was told to destroy his enemies. He wasn't just told to take it over. He wasn't just told to push them out. He wasn't just told to kill the warriors or to fight the army. He was told to destroy the Canaanites. Every man, every woman, every child, all of their animals, all of their pets, everything. Kill them all. Eradicate them. Wipe them out. They are your enemies. It doesn't sound like love to me. That sounds like the opposite of love. And I could see where they would say, well, God said, we got to destroy them. We can hate our enemies. And I can understand that. If they read the Psalms, Psalm 18:40 says, you made my enemies turn their back in flight, and I destroyed my foes. And David wrote this. And this is the NIV version. If you read it in the King James version, it says, thou hast also given me the necks of mine enemies, that I might destroy them that hate me. He's not only just singing praise about winning a battle, he's not singing a praise about defeating his enemy. No, he's singing praise that he has got the necks of his enemies and he destroyed them. And he's praising God because of it. That doesn't sound like love to me. So you can kind of see where they get this idea. Hate your enemies. Destroy your enemies. And we go back to it, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, we are going to take care of you. What did you say about me? Well, I'm going to fix you. Oh, you're talking about me behind my back? I don't think so. Oh, that's it. What did you do to me? Oh, okay. I'm going to get you back. And that's the way it went. But they missed it. And Jesus said, he came not to destroy the law. He is not here to change the law. And he doesn't change it. But he corrects. And he tells them before, he told the Pharisees, you are ignorant because you do not understand. And they didn't understand. And they misinterpreted. You got to understand this, that God, I'm going to switch my page here. That God commanded Joshua to go into that land and to eradicate the evil from that land. He said that the Canaanites were bringing abominations in the sight of God. The gods that they were worshiping, the evil practices that they were taking part in, the rituals, the different types of sacrifices, these things they were delving into. That was so evil and disgusting in the sight of God. He said that evil has to be eradicated. That has to be wiped out. Because that will contaminate you. And I am sending you into this promised land. I am trying to keep you pure. We need to eradicate that evil. So God gave them permission to do this. When David talks in the Psalms about destroying his enemies, he's not talking about his personal enemy. He's not saying, thank you, Lord, I was able to beat that so-and-so. I got him back good. No. He's talking about what his nation was able to accomplish, the evil they were able to overcome, the fact that they were able to follow the will of God. It has nothing to do with his personal animosities, his personal hatreds, his personal grudge. He's not getting back at anybody. That's the difference. God does not condone personal hatred. God does not ask you to hate your enemy. And that's where the thing got twisted around. That's how they missed it. Jesus said in Matthew 5 that the word of God was twisted. You heard it said to love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you to love your enemy. If you think back about this, this all goes back to different things about people feuding and hating each other. And I was looking at that and I was like, you know, this kind of sounds like the old feuds, you know, the Hatfields and McCoys, and they're going back and forth and they're fighting it out. And I went and looked it up. And I wanted to see, okay, I wanted to remember just how did that all work out? What was the end of it? You know, where did it go? And some of you might have heard the Hatfields and McCoys, supposedly it started over a pig. The ownership of a pig started this huge feud. It actually started a little bit before that, about 13 years before that. One of the Hatfield's cousins were coming home from the war, and this happened about the time of the Civil War. And they lived on the border of Kentucky and Virginia, and the Hatfields were Northerners, the McCoys were Southerners. So obviously they already had some difference of opinion there. There were some grudges going on. And one of the Hatfield's cousins was coming back from the war, and he was killed. And it was blamed on the McCoys. It was never really proven the McCoys did it, but that started it out. It took 13 years of that grudge simmering and smoldering before anything really happened about it. Because to tell you the truth, according to the history, the Hatfields really didn't like that cousin anyway. So it's okay they killed them. But the thing is that once this escalated, once they started fighting over this ownership of this pig, it just got worse and worse. He did something to me, I'm going to do something back. You do something to me, I'm going to do back to you, and back and back and back. And it said here that the feud reached its bloody peak in 1888 in what has come to be known as the New Year's Night Massacre. A group of Hatfields attacked the McCoy's cabin in the middle of the night after opening fire on the cabin, killing two children and brutally beating their mother. The men burned down the house. Wow. Now that's out of hand. Imagine what they could have done with a little love. The funny thing is that somewhere along the line, after the governors sent in the militias, got them separated, got them to cool off, I think somebody did get some love into their hearts. Because thank goodness for television, in 1979, they appeared on The Family Feud and finally had it out once and for all. They won some cash and prizes and everything was good. But they knew at that time, originally they said, well, these are my enemies and we're going to take care of them. And they knew exactly who they were going for. And in our lives, we have to look at that. We say, God says, love your enemy. And we have to say, well, wait a minute. Who's my enemy? You know, he gives us a definition. He says, those who hate you, those who wish you evil, those who detest you, those who have a real loathing for you, those who are often angered even by the fact that you're trying to do something good for them. They don't want no part of you. Those who threaten you, who insult you, who persecute you, speak evil words against you, backstab you, maybe cut you off in traffic, spit on your name. Those are the people. That's the definition. Anybody in that position God says, okay, now, go love them. You got that picture in your head? Can you think about it for a second? Can you picture about somebody in your head that really gets under your skin or that really doesn't like you? Somebody who's really done you a wrong in your life. Think about that person. And God says, now, okay, now, go and love them. What? Oh, that's crazy. That goes completely against human nature. I'm not going to do that. We live in a society that says, no, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. That's fine, but you punch me in the nose, I'm going to punch you back. That's the way it works. God says, no, it's not the way it works. That is not how it's going to be. We have a new order. That is not good enough for my church. That is not good enough for my kingdom. And that will not be how it is for my children. And he wants you to change that. He wants you to take everyone who persecutes you, says things against you, hates you, despises you, and he wants you to do something without even thinking about it. Not even a conscious effort. He wants you to love them. Wow. I don't know about you, but that's an awfully tall order for me. Okay, I have a real tough time with that. Especially when I'm angered and mad. And I have to call upon God and say, God, I need your Holy Spirit to do this for me because I can't. I am not capable. How do you find love in your heart for somebody you're so angry with or somebody that's mistreated you so badly? We have to remember that if we are called to live for God and we're called to be a disciple of Christ, we are called to love our neighbor as ourself. Now, who is our neighbor? Who is our enemy? You got to start drawing those lines. But the thing is that God has provided us with ways to do this. And he's called us to love. And the type of love he's asked us to love with is called agape. And you've heard this last week. Pastor Mitch talked about agape love. And this is a beautiful concept. I want to talk to you about it a little bit more. Because agape love is the very nature of God. It says God is love in 1 John 4. And God is love because it's an actionary love. Agape love is an action. It's not just a feeling. It's not just that feeling that makes your liver quiver. It's not just that flutter in my heart when I see my wife and oh, and I love her. It's not even the love that you would have for somebody that you really respect and you admire. And you say, man, I love that guy. I can look up to him. It's not even that. Because it's not based on feelings. Agape love is an action. And the key to understanding that is that it's known by the action it prompts. We're all used to the type of love we've seen in the little video. We're all used to that whole singing in the rain. We're going to dance with our umbrella because why? Because we're in love. It feels good. And there's nothing wrong with that. But this is different. Think about this. God so loved agape, the world, that he gave his only son. Did that feel good for God? Did he want to watch that suffering and torment? No, but he did it. Jesus so loved agape, the world, that he was willing to be hung on a cross. He so loved that he did what God required. Many of you can relate to this. A mother or a father that has a sick child, you will stay up all night with that child, even if you've got to go to work in the morning. Is it what you want to do? No. But you so loved agape, that child, you will do what you need to do because of love. That is loving somebody. By God's command, you are seeking their blessing and their betterment through your actions. It's not that feeling of flutter, flutter, but it's that feeling of obeying. It's that feeling of follow through. It's that feeling of doing what's right because of God. That's why it says in the Bible, Exodus 24:4. If you come across your enemy's ox or donkey wandering off, be sure to take it back to him. Like, what does that have to do with us? But look at this. This is an Exodus. God's telling them right from the beginning, I want you to act in a certain way. You're not following your heart. If you see something wrong with your enemy, you see something happening, go and help them. Take it back to them. Do what you're supposed to do, even if you don't like that person, even if they're mean to you, even if they've been cruel to you. You are going to act in a different way. Why? Because you have the love of God inside you. Proverbs 24:17 says, do not gloat when your enemy falls. When they stumble, do not let your heart rejoice. You have to control your heart. You do not want to let your heart rejoice in somebody else's misfortune, even if they're your enemy. We have to move from a society that has learned to give as good as we get to learning to giving love despite what we get. That is one way that we are going to learn to walk the path that Christ has set us on. Now, how are we going to do that? That is a very difficult concept. I myself have found it very hard to follow that path. Like I said, when you're mad at somebody, when you're upset, when somebody's hurting you, when somebody's persecuting you, when you don't like some person, how do you find it in your heart to do something good for them? That's difficult. That's crazy. That's where you find your strength in the Word. If you look at Luke's Gospel, chapter 10, and we don't have time to look at the whole thing, you'll find the story of a Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan came across a man in the road lying in blood. He had love towards him that was an unknown love, because he did not know this man. But he had love that came out for this man. He had a love for him that was not an affinity love, because he had nothing in common with this person. He had love for him that had nothing to do with an attraction or being able to look up to him or have anything of that sort, because this man was a bloody, beaten pulp in the road. He was not attractive. He was not somebody you'd want to come up to and help. And he had an unprofitable love, because it was not getting anything out of helping him, because it was actually going to cost him something. If you know this story, people, you know that this Good Samaritan put this man up in an inn, paid for his medical expenses, paid for his food, paid for his lodging. This is a man he didn't even know. But what's more, this was an enemy. This was a Samaritan and a Jew. Jews and Samaritans did not associate. They didn't do it. This man crossed political boundaries, social boundaries, cultural boundaries. And these were things that you do not do. But he felt that love of God in his heart, and he crossed those boundaries, and he did what God wanted him to do. And we can look at that and say, wow, okay, now I get it. Agape love. An action love, something I can do. We can look at the greatest example of all in the Bible, and we can look at the story of Jesus Christ, who forgave the man who took the hammer and nail and nailed him to the cross. Not only did he forgive the man that nailed him to the cross, he forgave me. I myself have turned my back on God. I have cursed God's name. I have done things in my life that I am ashamed for, and I have sinned. And God, I come back to him, And he takes his arms and he opens them up and he wraps them around me. And he shows me his love. And he gives me his blessings. Why? He gives me that agape love. What I want you to remember is this. We're supposed to agape our enemies. Jesus is asking us to agape people no matter what they do to us, no matter what their actions are. We're supposed to not let that invade our hearts. We're supposed to treat them with love. It doesn't mean that we have to love our enemies in the same way we're going to love our families or love our friends or even people we respect. But we have to open our hearts to them. And I think one of the best things you can do, in my experience for this, is to pray for those people. Because when you pray, it's easier to agape somebody who dislikes you or that you dislike. Because God will often open up your heart. He will help you find that compassion that you need, that path to forgiveness. You'll be able to see that that person needs to find the love in their own heart. And maybe, just maybe, through that act, you'll be able to make a difference. You'll be able to start then a chain reaction. Remember, if people know nothing else about a Christian, they will know you by your love. What greater testament can we show the world than our love?